For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, best as FA Cup ever. Classic slice of Northern Soul from Wigan. Saturday, dancing in ecstasy at Football Mecca, then coming down hard by weekend's end, thanks to other clubs' records. Elsewhere, it's from highs to goodbyes. Tears as Sir Alex, Scorsese and possibly Wazza bow out at OT. Moyes and Neville at Goodison. And yes, Michael Owen at the Britannia. There's more. Neymar, Falcao and transfer talk. Playoffs, Watford's incredible comeback with Leicester. Montari, Madison at San Siro. PSG, beer-drenched Bayern. Goodbye to Van Bommel, one Dutchman who likes to put out other people's joints. And Jesus wept as Benfica blow the title at Porto. All of that in today's Football Weekly. So many moments. Has there ever been a weekend like it? Amy Lawrence joining us today. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
Hi. Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
Barry Glendening.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Yeah, has ever... You were tweeting this, Amy. You said, Watford, Almunia, Hero, Mancini, Axe, Tottenham, Hope, Wes Rooney's, by Fergie, don't forget Wigan, breathless football, whatever next.
I must admit, I found this completely intoxicating. And coming not that long after, I was having a text exchange with a friend of mine who supports Wolves, where we got really down on football, and
really?
he's been watching Wolves forever, and was saying that for the first time in a long time he doesn't want to renew his season ticket, and there's a disconnect between the fans and the players, and all the things about football that it's quite easy to get demoralised and negative about, and kind of we felt ourselves feeling, well, how maddening football can be, that you can sort of love it and loathe it all in the same.
Love's like
package.
That, though, isn't it?
I know, but then this weekend comes along and it was just relentlessly riveting, and that it's hard to pick a highlight, although if I had to, I would certainly say the Watford finale
really?
Was just magnificent.
Really? What was your moment of the weekend? Barry?
Well, I was lucky enough to watch the closing stages of, the second half of Porto 2 Benfica 1 in a local Portuguese bar around the corner from my house. Oh, Cantino on the Stockwell Road. I'd highly recommend. They sell a steak that's bigger than your head and you can absolutely stuff your face. You need to the point where you need to be rolled home and have a nice bottle of wine for about 20 quid. So, but anyway, I watched that game in there and full of Portuguese people. I think myself and my mate were the only two non-Portuguese in the entire establishment. I think the restaurant in question is more Benfica-ish than Porto. So when the winning goal went in, also in injury time, which means Porto are almost certain to win the title now, and Benfica would have been in the box set if they'd held on for the draw.
Box seat, I think.
What did I say?
Box set.
Yeah, they were in the wire box set. The place, it didn't really erupt. There was actually a bit of an edge in there. There was some very angry people, so we kind of just scuttled off home. Getting late at that point anyway. But yeah, that would probably be my moment of the weekend.
Brilliant. Okay, well, there were just so many to choose from. Let's start anyway with events at Wembley. The result, they said, couldn't happen. Would you call this the biggest upset ever? I mean, I think certainly in terms of the odds against, say, Wigan winning compared to when Wimbledon won, Wigan were much bigger outsiders.
Well, I don't know what odds Wimbledon were on the day of the final. Wigan were 11-1 you could get on them to win in 90 minutes.
Was anyone crazy enough to put money on them, Barry?
I had £13.46 on them.
Bingo.
At 11-1.
All right.
It's a very precise number.
Yeah, well, it meant the amount of money I had in my betting account, there was sort of an odd £13.46 at the end of it, so I thought I'll stick that on, and I'd be left with a nice round number when they lose. So, you know, thanks a bunch, Wigan.
Absolutely.
You've caused me no end of distress, because I don't have a nice round number in my betting
account. Sure you soon will have. Richly deserved, Jacob, by Wigan.
Yeah, and it was a good final as well. I think Wigan looked nervous for the first 5 minutes, where City got about them quite well, and I was worried. I thought that they were going to freeze, and City could have scored, I think, in that opening exchange. But once they settled, they were by far the better team, and it wasn't a back-to-the-wall performance at all. They outplayed City, who were just, it's kind of summed up their season, really. Manchester City were lethargic and didn't really look bothered, to be honest, and... But without wishing to take anything away from Wigan, I think Martinez out-tacticked Roberto Mancini. after about, we all thought it was going to be a 4-3-3 that Wigan were playing, and suddenly after about 20 minutes I realised that James McArthur, who usually plays in the middle, was playing as a sort of right wing back, and they couldn't handle it at all. They were outnumbered in midfield, and as for Callum McManaman, the young winger on the right, you can kind of understand why now Martinez has been raving about him so much. Every time he got the ball, he was running at Gael Clichy, who's a good left back, you know, France international, and he wasn't afraid to take him on. Even if he got knocked off the ball, he kept on coming at him, and by the end they couldn't handle him. They were doubling up, and he was the guy who got Pablo Zabaleta sent off in the, you know, deservedly sent off in the last 5 minutes.
We'll talk more about Mancini a little bit later on, but is it a coincidence that City were so flat on a day which began with the papers saying that the manager was going out anyway?
It certainly wasn't helpful, but I think one of the things that struck me about the final that was particularly nice to see is often when you see those sort of games between a very powerful club with a lot of established winners, internationals, and a lot of options as well, it's in that latter part of the game where you expect the difference to tell, and you expect to see Manchester City sort of sort themselves out and start to impose themselves. And you felt that normally Wigan would maybe do very well. Underdogs can last only so far, and then the difference tells in the end. But it felt almost the other way around. It felt like Wigan were getting more and more enthusiastic, more and more brave, which I thought was a nice choice of word from Martinez to sum up their approach. It was just so wonderful and refreshing to see that the underdog wasn't sort of, oh, here we go, they've played really well, and then they're going to get beaten in the last 10 minutes because City are going to throw on another a match winner. But clearly, you can't help thinking that it's not helpful to wake up on cup final day and find the sort of headlines that were going around about the managerial position. But not that it's new to Mancini, and I think that for a lot of his managerial career, he would be aware of this kind of thing. And I think probably not that bothered. He strikes me as the kind of manager who has quite a thick hide in that regard, and probably shouldn't have taken too much notice of it. And I think if you compare it, for example, to the way that Jurgen Klopp dealt with the situation when Goetze, the news came out just before their semi-final that he was off to Bayern, a sort of very potentially disturbing story away from the pitch. And Klopp was so... he handled that with such a kind of interesting blend of being very clever about it, being quite funny and self-deprecating about it. And whereas Mancini, by sort of blaming people and the whole thing seems... I mean, I don't think City have conducted themselves particularly brilliantly as a club over this, but they shouldn't have let it affect the cup final. They really shouldn't.
Mm. Heartwarming scenes, Barry. Uplifting scenes. Life-affirming scenes in the Wembley rain after the final whistle, Barry.
Yeah, and there were similar scenes all over the country over the weekend and around Europe. But
lots of think people who didn't like Man City, you're suggesting, Ren?
Well,
in other games.
No,
yeah.
I just mean that everyone who doesn't have an allegiance to City basically wanted Wigan to win. And, you know, plucky little Wigan. They get patronised within an inch of their lives. But they won. They deserved to win. They played good football. And hats off to them. But again, you have to ask, how is a team capable of playing that well in the trouble they're in? They have two matches left, both of which they have to win to stay in the Premier League. It seems very unlikely. I wouldn't rule it out, but it's unlikely.
You can't rule anything out. I think they demonstrated that on Saturday.
Exactly.
Just one shot on target in the FA Cup final. They scored with it. Ben Watson, he seemed the least excited person of all, actually, post-game. But all done to him. And I'm sure we've all mentioned the fact that... it was ironic because he had a broken leg and came back from it. And did you know that Dave Whelan broke his leg some time ago? Anyway,
yeah,
but
he's mentioned it.
The other stat about Wigan was the fact that they conceded just two goals in seven FA Cup games this season. And again, against Man City, very solid at the bat. I know there's this thing of being a cup team, but if they'd only done that in the league, they wouldn't be in this horrible position.
Well, if they'd only beaten Swansea, then they'd probably be staying up, you know, last week. And they're just this crazy eccentric side. You can suddenly turn it on in the last few weeks of the season, and usually against some of the better teams in the league. And to do it in the cup finals, just must be they must be slightly frustrated. I think that they couldn't have done it as well on Tuesday, and they've now got to go and do it against Arsenal.
All right. Well, the Arsenal game on Tuesday. Any chance they won this game? Did you see the game last year, Amy, when they won at Emirates?
Yes.
Can you see that happening again this time?
I can see it happening again this time.
You can.
Yeah, I think if Wigan play to borrow one of Arsene Wenger's phrases, with the handbrake off, then they're very capable of, you know, of springing a surprise. I think obviously it's, we can't tell until Tuesday night whether the emotion and the adrenaline of having won the cup is going to have an effect on their game. But I think looking at Arsenal's recent form, they're actually getting results, but not playing particularly well. And they're surprisingly been very strong defensively, and I think they've had 3 clean sheets in the last 4, Arsenal, but haven't been creating chances. They find it really difficult to get their game going. So if Arsenal are not sharp themselves, I think it's perfectly conceivable for Wigan to win.
Well, again, there'll be a lot of people, a lot of neutrals out there, a lot of Tottenham fans, of course, hoping that Wigan can pull a surprise. They did get beaten by Arsenal at the DW, but I think DeLonghi dominated that game. It was a late Arteta free kick, which got the points for the Gunners. Of course, Arsenal cannot afford to drop points themselves after Spurs had that come-from-behind win at Stoke.
That was so important for Spurs, because I think they need Arsenal to drop points. And although they probably weren't helped by Newcastle making themselves safe, and Alan Pardew coming out afterwards and saying, hey, we don't care if we lose 4-0 against Arsenal on the last day of the season, which was a fairly extraordinary comment, albeit probably said in the light of being incredibly relieved. But Tottenham do need Arsenal to drop points, but they really needed to keep the pressure on. And I think it was evident with AVB's reaction at the end, soaked in the rain, clenched fists, that he knew that. I think he senses that there is potential for Arsenal to still drop points, and it's going to be very nervy for all concerned.
Right. Are they going to do it Tuesday night, Wigan, Jacob?
Maybe.
All right. He's caught up in the...
I have a horrible feeling they are.
Do you think?
Yeah, because it will put Sunderland back down in the doo-doo and tee things up for a nerve-wracking final weekend, because we've so much to talk about today. Next Monday, it's going to be tumbleweed blowing through the studio.
Well, there will be, as you say, the 3 teams can go down, Wigan and then Sunderland and Aston Villa, and it's, as we all know, Wigan and Aston Villa on the final day, so that's by no means a given.
Yeah,
it just shapes up to be an extraordinary...
And plus,
night.
Sunderland's last game is against Tottenham, which means if Wigan beat Arsenal, Spurs will be going all out to steamroller Sunderland. So, yeah, I think the gods of script writing will see to it that Wigan beat Arsenal on Tuesday. I'm as much an admirer of Wigan as anyone, but I really hope they get hammered. But I suspect they won't.
Oh, wow.
By the way, just as a matter of interest, how was FA Cup Daybreak with Jimbo Kelly and Kevin Kilbane?
Oh, it was good, actually. Yeah, we had... Well, I'm not entirely sure. It just kind of happened for an hour and a half, and then we all went home.
Oh, okay. Well, Kevin Kilbane didn't, because he was then on 5 Live for the rest of the day.
That's true.
He's a shameless media slot.
Yeah, he has,
I knew we'd bring him down at some point.
Yeah. No, I thought he was our friend, and it turns out he's
anyone's friend.
Yeah. He's the bicycle of the broadcasting world, in a very real sense. Well, anyway, we salute you, Wigan. Whatever else happens... You've given us one of the season's special, special memories. After this, we'll be talking about some of the tearful goodbyes over the last couple of days. Passing of seasons, leaves falling from trees, men saying goodbye. Jacob, life moves on.
Bye.
Yep, the world turns. Sir Alex.
Yeah, he's gone.
He's gone. Yeah. Well, he hasn't quite gone. Yeah, that was the thing. Yeah. There is actually still another game.
Maybe they'll let him do another speech at the Hawthorns.
Perhaps so.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
All right.
It is the highest ground in the UK, so it would be like a suitable platform to address the nation.
Right.
I was sort of choked a bit. I was surprised by the fact that I was sort of choked.
By Friday, Wednesday.
I've never been his biggest fan, but I have a huge regard for the work he does. And he by all accounts, he is, behind the scenes, can be as lovely a bloke as he can be a horrible bloke, you know. And he does some really nice things for people he doesn't even know. Mm-hmm. But I thought his speech was great. It was off the cuff. It wasn't about him. It was about the club and it was about other people. He barely mentioned himself.
He didn't sing.
Which would have been nice, but I don't know if he's able to carry a tune, not that it stopped Phil Brown that time. And I wish him a very happy retirement.
When the news first broke, I must admit, I had a little bit of that excitement, that frisson of the teacher leaving the room for a bit. It's like we can all muck about now. But by Friday, the hugeness of it had hit home. Daddy's leaving home, basically. And by Sunday, watching that, luckily I had the sound down, but still.
But, I mean, the Premier League will rumble on just fine without
him. Will it,
him.
Barry?
It will. But he is going to be missed. And, you think there are Manchester United fans, adult Manchester United fans, who don't know a football landscape without him in it. Mm. And I've never had a new manager of their club. They don't know what it's like, this transitional period. So it's exciting for them, but it also must be quite scary.
Very, very scary. The perfect send-off in many ways, that game, Jacob.
Yeah, well, they got a classic late goal.
Yep.
Against Swansea.
Well taken by Rio, eh?
Yeah, very well taken. Smashed it in from a few yards out when they were at a time, I think. Just based on the highlights, it looked like Swansea were pressing quite hard for a winner.
They did have a late chance. And Mitchell's goal was nice as well. But it was all just really nice,
really
wasn't
deft,
it?
Really deft, yeah. Then he took Phil Jones's head off as well when he went in with the acrobatic volley.
Nice. On that note, nice songs from the Swansea fans. We thought you were dead, Robin Van Persie. We thought you were dead. After who was it? Ashley Williams.
Yeah,
aimed a ball at his head.
I thought also the farewell to Scholes was rather nice and notable as well. And I like the fact that when they were mentioning him, he got all embarrassed and shy and sort of tried to hide behind his teammates, and reminded me a bit of a sort of, well, I don't know, it might not be like this anymore, but a sort of school disco and a sort of 13, 14-year-old boy who somebody comes over and says, that girl fancies you, and says, oh, no, go on, go and say something, and he didn't really want to, but it was all rather touching.
Interesting analogy, Amy. What did Wayne Rooney remind you of? The boy's been suspended from school for smoking
That's
extremely expensive cigarettes
one.
Behind the bike shop.
I'm struggling a bit to understand quite what is going on with the whole Rooney situation. I don't know if anybody has any bright ideas, but it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
What is it, the fact that he earns whatever it is, north of 200,000 a week, and they've just bought Zaha, who's meant to be the same thing but younger?
Right, but Zaha's only 20, though, and he's only played in the Championship for Palace. So I don't think that they're looking at Wilfried Zaha as the replacement already for Rooney. But there is loads of talk, isn't there, that someone like Lewandowski or Falcao, although I'm reading this morning that Falcao's off to Monaco.
Well, that was a story yesterday on Sky Italia, which, of course, broke, first of all, the Guardiola to buy news. So a lot of people pretty much taking that as a done deal. We'll talk more about that as well later on. But Rooney, it was interesting, the fact that Sir Alex Ferguson went out of his way to highlight Rooney by, A, not bringing him into even the squad, and then mentioning him with pretty much his final remarks to the media.
I think it was Daniel Taylor said that he tweeted yesterday that Rooney had walked through the press room on his way to the executive box or something to take his seat for the game, that he had a face like thunder. And I'm not sure if he asked to be left out or if Ferguson didn't pick him because he didn't think his mind would be on the job. But I think it's time for him to leave United.
What's his strategy? You say you think it's time for him to leave United. To go where?
Somewhere new. Anywhere.
There was a story this weekend about Bayern Munich.
Chelsea,
there's another one.
Jose likes him a lot.
Does he?
Yeah. He's always spoken highly about Rooney, especially in... And he always said, I'd never be able to get him. But, he's more or less, he's going back to Chelsea, isn't he? And could be the one.
Could be the one. Taking over the Lampard goal-scoring midfielder role.
Maybe.
Interesting. So, well, there is still another game. It'd be interesting to see if Rooney makes the squad for that one. But otherwise, possibly has played his last game in a Manchester United shirt. Also, saying goodbye this weekend.
Sorry, just on the subject of Rooney, it was quite interesting that there was clearly audible booing of him when he went to collect his winner's medal.
Really?
Yeah. Not the whole stadium, but enough of the stadium for it to be heard. And I kind of felt a bit bad for him. I think he deserves a bit better than that, but,
it's the second time he has asked to leave the club, so
Yeah, but, some fans are if he stays there and scores goals again, then it'll be all will be forgiven again.
Right. Mind you, some might say that his original point that the club lacked ambition is illustrated by the fact that they brought in David Moyes to lead their next campaign. David Moyes also.
And then they brought in Robin van Persie, and you know, now he's playing instead of Rooney.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's ambition for you. Mm. Poor old Philip Neville getting a bit lost in the sea of goodbyes, because meanwhile over at Goodison Park you had David Moyes bidding farewell to Everton's home with a performance from his side that maybe gave the lie to the suggestion that his United team are going to be very boring.
Yeah, but a good win for Everton. Did you see the first goal? Really good one-touch move and classic Leighton Baines down the wing. Beat Jack Collison, who sold himself into Fellaini and Pino, combined set up for Morales, who just stroked it into the bottom corner. And they could have really taken West Ham to the cleaners yesterday. They could have had five or six, but for Jussi Askalainen and some pretty good goal line clearances from James Collins, it would have been. So I think it kind of sums up what a good job he's done there, David Moyes, what a good side they are.
Big Sam not going anywhere though, Jacob.
Yeah, and it was strange. David Gold, on Friday, he was asked in his press conference whether it was going to be sorted out, his contract, which has been rumbling on for ages, and they said when they're mathematically safe from relegation, he will. And then in between the Chelsea game at lunchtime and the cup final at 5:15, David Gold suddenly tweeted saying Sam Allardyce has signed a new two-year contract at West Ham, and which again is a little bit strange because it's been said for absolutely ages that it was going to be 3 years, which would have taken him up to the Olympic Stadium. But this one leaves him just short of that special time.
Maybe he just signed when it became apparent he wasn't going to be getting the Manchester United job, or the City job. Then
the Real Madrid job might be open though. So
there was a nice aside. I believe the West Ham supporters were singing "Where's Your Moisey Gone" to the Everton supporters, who replied, "You've got Sam Allardyce."
It's going to be a crazy season next season. Let's talk a little bit more now about Mancini and Pellegrini. Let's dial up, actually, Sidlow in Spain for the latest on the Malaga manager.
Hello, Jimbo.
Crazy. You know, since the day when we waved goodbye to you, we've needed you more than ever, Sid.
You just keep crawling back, don't you?
Keep crawling back. We didn't miss our water till our well ran dry. Yeah. Sid, it's been a big weekend in Spain, as it has been in England, and it's going to be a big week as well, etc., etc., etc. As the talk about Pellegrini heading to Man City rumbles on, not yet a done deal, but it looks pretty much as though that's going to happen. Is that right?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is the way that the British media have run with this, and Pellegrini clearly is leaving Malaga, but he said something quite interesting last night. He changed his tone quite a lot from the day before, and he said that there was lots of rumours coming out and that he hadn't spoken to anyone, and of course I put in big brackets here, that doesn't mean his people haven't either, because obviously his people have, we know that's true, and that he hasn't signed a deal with anyone yet. Now of course that may well also be true, that he hasn't actually signed a deal with anyone yet, but yeah, he'll go from Malaga, and it will almost certainly be to Manchester City, and it'll be very interesting to see how he fits in.
Well, that's very much the question, isn't it? Because he's done ever so well with teams like Malaga, Villarreal, where of course he did a real number on Mancini when Mancini came up against him in the Champions League.
Yeah, people don't seem to have picked up on that one.
But in his more comparable experience, would you say, when he went to a big club with lots of money, which is what Man City are now, how would you read his season there? He spent a lot of money but didn't win anything, or he was just unlucky to come up against that Barcelona?
His Real Madrid season, yeah. Well, the first thing to say is he didn't really spend a lot of money. Real Madrid did. Now, I know that might sound like I'm deliberately splitting hairs, but I think it's worth pointing out that Real Madrid didn't sign players that Pellegrini wanted them to sign. They signed players that, as so often, their president wanted to sign.
But that might be the case at Man City as well. So
yeah, that may well be. Exactly. Absolutely. No, of course.
But drawing on from that experience, how well do you think, you know, if you were to base how well you think he's going to do at Man City on what he did at Real Madrid, what would you say?
Well, the Real Madrid season, I mean, to analyse the Real Madrid season, he turned up at a club because the director general wanted him, but the president never really did. And he had a really quite vicious campaign against him, which would sort of, from the media, which would sort of matter, but really does matter when he knew full well that the president was behind it in terms of the campaign that Marca launched against him. He failed in the Copa del Rey in that they were defeated 4-0 by a third tier team, and that really was a genuine humiliation. In the Champions League, they got through the group and they were beaten by Lyon with Gonzalo Higuain hitting the post in the second leg, and perhaps were a little unfortunate not to go through. And it was the sixth year in a row that they'd fallen at that stage of the Champions League. So, and I think that certainly has to be seen as probably a minor failure, but definitely a failure. The league campaign, I think you can construct an argument that says that he was really quite unlucky. They picked up 96 points. More than any Real Madrid team had ever done before until that season, but were beaten by that Pep Guardiola side that went and won absolutely everything. That was coming off the back of winning everything and that broke a points total as well. He was without Cristiano Ronaldo, I think, for 7 weeks of that season in a long run, and Madrid's form was hit a little bit during that period. I thought he had them playing really quite nice football at times, but then I suppose you could argue with those players he should do. So what does that tell us about Man City? Well, I think it tells us that we've got someone who can construct a team, we've got someone who can make a team play very well, and we've got someone who can challenge the league title against a brilliant side and then not win it. I suppose the question mark is, what kind of sides are there around City next year? I mean, Chelsea will almost certainly be stronger because obviously I think Mourinho will be their manager. I think they'll bring in new players. I think they'll be stronger. I think we're entitled to assume that Arsenal will strengthen this summer. We don't really know, I suppose, what will happen at Manchester United. And you always have to look at it in the context of who else is around them. And I suppose to take it back to Man City and Mancini, you know, what are the rivals like and what were the City's rivals like when they won the league with Mancini in charge?
Does Pellegrini speak good English?
Yes. But he's a filthy foreigner, so he shouldn't go.
Right. Yeah. You've been reading the wrong papers, haven't you, Sid?
On almost every level, yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Elsewhere in Spain, Sid, Barcelona sealed that title. Well done to them. Or yep, it was sealed for them by Real Madrid before.
Well, I'm writing about this now. It's been a very, very strange league title. And right down to the fact that perhaps the kind of the definition of what a strange league title it has been is that Tito Villanova didn't see his team win the league. Right. Because they won the league with Real Madrid's defeat on Saturday night, and Villanova said he didn't watch the game.
Interesting. Just to finish off a little bit of transfer talk, Sid. Falcao, this Monaco story.
I think it's so intriguing and so left field that I'm kind of tempted to say, well, it seems almost too bizarre to have been made up.
Well, the story about it was that he was going to go to Monaco, but only for 6 months, so that he could then come back to Real Madrid with that kind of Monaco experience having been a bit of a buffer to prevent warfare, you know, civil war breaking.
Yeah, I just don't see that, certainly not 6 months anyway. I don't see that because it's a very complex process, because it's unnecessarily convoluted. I'm not convinced to what extent would Monaco necessarily want themselves to be used by that. I suppose the factors really to look at are, it's not just that Falcao is represented by Jorge Mendes, it's that Falcao is part owned by Jorge Mendes. And that I think this is where you start to see potentially, I mean, who knows, maybe Falcao's desperate to go to Monaco and so perhaps fair enough. But this is where potentially you see some of the problems with third party ownership, because you wonder about who's making decisions and for what reasons when those decisions come up. But then of course you see a picture of Monaco Bay and you imagine how much money he's gonna make and you think, well, off you go then.
Yeah. What about Neymar then? What about the 120 or 100 million euro package that Real Madrid are having to put together supposedly and flying out to Santos to stage talks with the Brazilian club at the moment? What about this, Sid?
Well, if I was Barcelona, I'd be jumping up and down cheering.
Right.
Because Barcelona have effectively got a deal in place now. Of course, officially they can't say so, but they've effectively got a deal in place with Neymar. The reason why any deal for Real Madrid would be so expensive is in part at least because they would have to pay the compensation to enable Neymar to break that deal with Barcelona. So in other words, Barcelona would get very rich for not having bought someone. And from their point of view, I suppose there must be a certain degree of temptation in that. It's also the oldest story in the book, this. Look, they're going to buy someone quick, let's get in there and take him off them routine. And it makes a lie of one of those lines that were always fed by Real Madrid, which is that Barcelona are obsessed by us, but we don't care about them. It's just complete nonsense, of course.
Yeah, indeed so. Sid, thank you very much for joining us today. I can only imagine we'll be back on Thursday.
Well, firstly, it's a preview to the big Copa del Rey final on Friday.
Of course it is.
So that should be fun, not least because today you've brilliantly managed not to ask a single question about Mourinho.
Well, indeed not. Indeed not. Oxygen and publicity and all that, Sid.
Exactly.
We'll speak to you then on Thursday.
Cool. Cheerio, Jimbo. Bye-bye.
Now, Wednesday in Amsterdam, Chelsea facing Benfica. Last chance for Chelsea, Jacob.
Yeah, they've messed up so many trophies this season, and now they've got one last chance to win one.
One last chance.
Yeah.
One last job for Benitez.
Yeah, they'd be the first team to win the European Cup and the UEFA Cup in that order in the consecutive seasons.
Right.
Yeah.
If they lacked motivation...
I know.
There it
and
is
they could join
right
Ajax, Bayern Munich and Juventus, I think, is right in winning all three European trophies.
Hurrah!
So that is that's a landmark.
Big things.
That can't be, you know.
Big things. Now, the two teams, Chelsea and Benfica, come into this game in very different fashion. Chelsea, of course, fresh from that terrific win away at Aston Villa at the weekend. I say terrific, but it was, in some ways, a somewhat pyrrhic victory because they lost Hazard and John Terry to injuries.
But, I mean, but... Frank Lampard, I mean, there was enough to celebrate there, wasn't there?
There was, wasn't there?
Frank Lampard. I wouldn't say it was that pyrrhic in the sense that they had a big, momentous thing to enjoy.
Yeah, they did. A sixth-form poet tweeting, Frank Lampard becomes Chelsea's record goal scorer, Dave Whelan wins the FA Cup, somewhere there's a Tory with a lamp, etc. Very nice. Lampard, will he start, do you think, in Amsterdam?
Well, he made a pretty good case for himself.
Yeah, but he's been making that case all season and he still doesn't get a start.
Yeah, I don't think he'll start. I think... be Ivanovic and Cahill centre-back and Luiz will play midfield with Ramirez. Although Ramirez was moronic on Saturday with the red card. He was going about like a crazy person with... Yeah. Could have been, you know... He put in a high foot on one player and then got away with it. And then 2 seconds later, it was another high foot on Agbonlahor who got sent off. And they got a bit lucky to... like Christian Benteke then did the same thing.
Yeah.
15 minutes later, got sent off and Lampard scored straight away.
Yeah, he did indeed. Let's talk more about Lampard. A crazy stat, somebody was saying, in the last 20 years, I think he's the third highest scorer in the Premier League. It's just amazing, no, for a midfielder. 15 goals in 20 starts this season. It is the most ludicrous thing in football that his club is saying, we can't see any reason we'd want to have you around anymore.
Well, I... have heard, I don't know if it's true or not, that Abramovich just doesn't like him. So, and if that's the case, then it makes, you know, why would he offer him a new deal?
But the only thing that doesn't make sense about that is if he didn't, does he suddenly not like him? Or, I mean, did he,
well,
or if he, I,
I've
he didn't like him all along, then why?
I've heard it goes back to the Andre Villas-Boas time in that Lampard was apparently, and I don't know, again, I don't know if this is true, that Lampard was a key figure in undermining Villas-Boas and sort of forcing Abramovich's hand when it came to firing him. And it's a decision that Abramovich regrets. And because of that, apparently he doesn't like him and doesn't want him at the club, doesn't want to further enrich him. Now, the thing is, Lampard seems like a very likable guy, but then... You know, if anyone could take a dislike to a very likable guy, it would be Abramovich.
The thing is, if you're Lampard, you put yourself in his shoes for now, and there's this idea that, you know, he should be absolutely desperate to stay on at Chelsea, and, you know, may well be that that's the case. But having achieved everything that he has achieved, would he not want to now go to America or to, you know, to experience one of those fantastic years or couple of years abroad where...
Monte Carlo, by the bay.
Absolutely. He seems like the kind of chap who's a fairly worldly view compared to the majority of English footballers. And
Cyprus.
Would get a lot out of...
But has he actually said that, you know, he desperately wants to stay at Chelsea? Because
yeah, he said it again on the weekend, didn't he? But I do agree, if you were going to go out, this would be a pretty good time to do it. Just nail the record.
Maybe
Moose can ride to the rescue, that's the question, you know?
But, yeah, but why not do the equivalent of Alex Ferguson? He's had a phenomenal career.
Stay for 26 years.
But if he did, I mean, we don't know as well what the situation is with his kids because he's separated from his wife. What kind of access you get, blah, blah, blah. And his new fiancée, she works in TV. She presumably used to live in the big celebrity TV house with you until she took
until
up
Until I
with,
got kicked out. Yeah. But
there are those other factors that could be preventing him from going to live in the States or going to China or wherever. The way some journalists are painting it, think he's been treated terribly badly by Chelsea. He's not. He's very well remunerated by them. He's on a contract, and when that expires, he will get another one, either from them or for somebody else, and he will receive a huge amount of money for that. It's not like, you know, he's going to be homeless begging for spare change because Chelsea have treated him so deplorably. He'll be okay.
All right, then. That's a relief. Now, I say that to the two teams coming into this game in slightly different fashion. Chelsea off the back of a win, which does it mathematically seal top four for them? Yep, that's done. Benfica, meanwhile, Barry, as you were mentioning before, caught at the death in a match they thought they had played pretty much the way they wanted. They just needed a draw to stay 2 points clear of Porto at the top of the Superliga with one game to go. They were 1-1 in the 91st minute, and then...
Kelvin, the substitute, scored a fine goal, spanked a diagonal drive across the goalie's bows and in the bottom right-hand corner. And... Jorge Jesus, is that how we pronounce it? Or
absolutely.
George Jesus?
Yep.
Yes, he sank to his knees in the technical area. He was wearing his trademark bad hair and red tracksuit bottoms, which I thought might be a tribute. And if Jonathan Wilson was watching, I'm sure he'd have thought the same to Bob Stokoe's FA Cup final attire in 1973 when Sunderland beat Leeds 1-0. He was wearing red tracksuit, a brown raincoat, and I think it was a flat or a Trilby hat.
Mm. Very, Bob Stoker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suspect poor old Jorge might still be just on his knees in the technical area, his face frozen in terror.
Yeah.
It will be difficult for Benfica to bounce back from that.
Well, absolutely.
That's looks crushed.
Like they've blown after not losing a single game all season. They go and lose the worst of all. And Porto... set to snatch the title away from their arch rivals. Benfica, are they going to bounce back in this game? How do you feel about Benfica-Chelsea, Jacob?
I think that Hazard being out is a big one, because if he is out, he went on this late counter-attack in the 93rd minute or something for Chelsea, and he got tackled, and as he did, he pulled up and feeling his hamstring, so you would imagine that's not something you would recover from in 3 days. And he's been in really good form recently, and you know, if he doesn't play, then it's...
He's saved their bacon in this league before, hasn't he, Europa League?
Yeah, he has. Yeah. And if he doesn't play, then, you know, it's a bit of a downgrade. Although Victor Moses is a good player, it's not quite the same level, is it? And, you know, so that's going to hurt Chelsea a little bit. And Benfica are a good side. They've been good in Europe this season. I think probably the only defeat recently has been to Fenerbahce in the away leg in the first round. And...
Their only defeat in 11 continental
Yeah, and they came
pitches.
In from the Champions League as well.
Yeah.
Beat Newcastle. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All impressive. Also, there's no Demba Ba, which means... Bum, bum, bum.
Torres.
The man in the mask. Be afraid.
One of Chelsea's men in the mask.
Demba Ba's got his mask as well, hasn't he?
But Torres has five goals.
But the one in the mask with the number 9 on
it. Yeah. He's got five goals, though, for Chelsea in the Europa League.
Uh-huh.
Oscar Cardozo has six.
Oof.
Yeah.
Hey.
Benfica.
Amy?
I think it's hopefully going to be a really good final, but I just think we've seen so much of Chelsea in finals, and they have almost an autopilot where you know would say, regardless of who plays and who the manager is, that they have it in them to find what is required to win finals. They've shown such unbelievable fortitude.
Right, when they had Didier Drogba?
Absolutely.
Right. There's also the curse of Bela Gutman to throw into all this. Bela Gutman, the former Benfica manager who, in a dispute to... with the club after winning back-to-back European titles, was then sent on his way and supposedly said, we talked about this in a previous pod that you haven't caught up on, you'll never win another European title without me, not in 100 years.
And they haven't.
Well, no, not so far, yeah. But hey.
They've had some finals, though, haven't they? But they haven't won either.
Yeah, yeah. I think seven times, yeah. If I'm not mistaken. I don't know. I got
manager just said that any time he left a club, you know, and they probably do. Mancini could say, you'll never win anything again, not in 100 years.
Right.
And Manchester United or Manchester City could win the Premier League next season. So are we just saying this Bella character had mystical magic powers?
He's Hungarian.
All right.
Now, I did get into trouble for this, but I don't know if you ever saw that film Drag Me to Hell.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I don't know if he probably kissed a button or something like that. Ooh, that was a scary film.
It was.
Yeah, the atmosphere ruined.
You warned me against watching it.
Well, I didn't say don't watch it. Don't watch it with me was probably what I said, because right. I squeaked so consistently through the film that everybody else ended up laughing at all the scary things. I do that in scary films.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the scariest film you've ever seen?
Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
What?
Yeah, terrifying. The bit when Large Marge... It's he gets picked. If you've seen the film, you know the bit I mean. But equally, I stood up and screamed. Another one, Don't Look Now, ruined it for everyone in the cinema there by going, oh, just before the bit where the dwarf turns around with the knife. And everyone else turned around to laugh at me and missed the denouement. Anyway.
Do you think we can start up a film club with James?
Scary movies. Which no, really, I don't like
Zan Brooks
films.
Might be a bit upset.
The Others, that was a scary one. Yeah. Creeping kind of chill that was, rather than being. I don't like horror films myself. What's the scariest film you've ever seen, Barry?
I think the first Saw film
vile. I don't like slasher films.
And Jaws, I think. Was good. And the thing is, if you look at Jaws now,
yeah.
I mean, the shark is so rubbish.
Is it not scary?
Well, it is still scary, but when I saw it first, I was a kid.
Yeah.
And the sight of the shark, say, eating Quint was just terrifying, whereas now it's just comical because it's just this big bloody rubber thing.
I was reminded of Rent-A-Ghost recently and went to watch an episode of Rent-A-Ghost, and
it
was absolutely terrible.
Yeah, you can't be scared by it.
I remember it as being really not bad.
When I saw The Lost Boys, I thought it was the greatest film I'd ever seen, and then I went back and saw it again about 10, 15 years later. Rubbish.
So to conclude, films you enjoyed when you were young are often not as good when you review them years later. So many things have happened this weekend that haven't really given enough time to, for example, Norwich getting their biggest win in, is it 20 years? That
biggest form? Premier League win since September 93 when they won 5-1 Everton.
Mm.
And bet you can't tell me who scored four of the goals.
Effen Okoku, he's a close personal friend of mine.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
So you can tell me.
Is he?
No, I like him. Mm. I don't know if he likes me, but...
You know him?
I share his studio with him from time to time.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's mentioned that.
Over and over again.
No, he's mentioned it.
I would.
Norwich and Newcastle are up. Aston Villa, Sunderland, Wigan, we talked about that. Fulham, Liverpool. How many defeats in a row is that for Fulham? Loads. It's loads of defeats in a row. And Daniel Sturridge has scored more goals in his first 13 Premier League appearances for Liverpool than any other player at that club has, which is remarkable, isn't it? I did not see that happening. Did you see that happening when he went there?
No, he's been a great signing. And, fair play to him.
Fair play to him. We've talked about what happened with the Superliga title, which looks heading towards Porto now. Paris Saint-Germain, Paris Enfant Capital, as this morning's L'Equipe has it. And pictures of them all jumping up and down and celebrating. There's Ibra smiling. This is before the bit where he gets the hump with Leonardo. Why, Amy?
It appears that he was asked to go and do a drug test right in the middle of the point of the celebrations where all the Paris Saint-Germain players were huddled around in the dressing room going, way, and jumping around and getting very excited. And Leonardo tapped Zlatan on the shoulder and said, come on, son, time to go and do your duty. And
it's all on camera as well. It's lovely.
It is on camera.
Zlatan's there with his big grin and Leonardo's tapping him. Excuse me.
Yes, and then at which point Zlatan gives an ample demonstration of how he can appear as a 6'5" karate expert or whichever martial art it is, I can't remember, and has a right old go at Leonardo.
He says, you always ruin everything. Fantastic. Magnificent. But only once in the last 10 years has he not won a league title. The league title.
But also to win it with, I think, six different clubs is... I mean, somebody said yesterday, that's nothing. You've got to win it, like, you know, with the same club. Makes it even more impressive. And I'm not sure I agree with that.
Not sure about that at all. Anyway, all very interesting. So that was a 1-0 win for them at Olympic Lyonnais. We talked about Monaco. Did we talk about Falcao? We did talk about that,
yes.
Didn't we? Yeah, okay.
So just on Paris Saint-Germain, I mean, is it not the Ancelotti situation? We're talking managerial merry-go-rounds is also sort of
it is interesting, isn't it? I mean, there's this whole kind of continental managerial manager. I have no idea what's going to happen there.
I want Arsene Wenger to go to PSG and refuse to spend any money.
Oh, that'd be droll, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, in Italy. There was actually what turned out to be a rather dull 0-0 between Roma and Milan at the San Siro on Sunday night. Brilliant first half, very, very poor second. Newsworthy points included Totti getting a late red card, the game being held up for a minute and a half while the referee gave a second warning to the Romanisti about boos and racist abuse that seemed to be coming down from their area of the stadium. But above all, Suliale Muntari with an absolute extraordinary sort of nervous breakdown, basically. Balotelli, in the first half, picks up a yellow card for what seemed a fairly soft challenge. And the referee shows him the card, and then he's running back up the field, and he passes Muntari. Muntari had already been warned about his language, must have said something to him, because the referee turns. But before he can put his hand in his breast pocket and pull out the cards, Muntari seizes him with a vice-like grip on his wrist. The referee can't believe what's happening. He's giving him a wrist back. He's trying to shake free. Muntari grabs him with another hand so as to give him almost a Chinese burn. And the referee's locked there in the grip of Muntari, who's staring at him from about 6 inches away, eyeball to eyeball. The referee's struggling to get his card. Muntari's plan is clear. For the next 60 minutes, he's going to hold on to the referee's eye so that he won't get booked. The referee eventually breaks free, but Muntari's on him again, this time like a Secret Service agent. And the referee has a weapon or something. He basically gives him one of those bear hugs so you can't actually move your arms.
And at this point, it's assorted Roma players trying to prize him away and drag him away.
Everything's going on at this point, but the referee breaks free and gives him a card, and eventually he collapses for a bit on the field. And I've no idea what's going on with him. Maybe some stuff's happening outside of football that's leading to him being highly strong, but I've never, ever... You know, we chuckle about John Terry putting a hand on the referee, but... Never seen a referee tackled like that by a player.
Will he get further sanctions?
Well, you
for
think
that?
Because I think it was a straight red before this happened. He was going to show him a straight red, I believe. So his reaction afterwards is going to mean it's a significant amount of time before he's back. Amy,
well, I know he skated over it, but the stoppage for the racism chants coming from the Roma end is quite disturbing in the sense that you think they can say what they like. There's a minute stoppage while somebody goes over and appeals to them not to, and then the game carries on.
Well, that doesn't
strike me as a particularly effective way of trying to make progress.
You can debate about how the best way of making progress is, and I think the real progress is only going to come through a system of education, which is a very long-term thing, and there's no instant solution. But while the phenomenon is still happening, I think that there's a lot to be said for what they did. There was a one warning, and then when it happened a second time, the referee said, OK, now we're going to stop the game, and the game was stopped. And then the game restarted for the benefit of everybody else who was there and the players, et cetera, and nothing else happened. So in that sense, you could say, yeah, it's terrible that it happened. It's terrible that the racist abuse happened. But the countermeasure which they've now decreed, I'm not sure if this is an Italian or European thing, whereby referees have the power to suspend games, did seem to be effective. Let's hope that next time those fans won't do anything. There's no
but
happy
on the
ending
other hand,
for this,
if they,
really.
If,
without,
you know, if fans wish to, they can... You know, keep getting games suspended.
Well, yeah, they can do that in a variety of ways, I suppose. But what can you do? Fans will do dumb things, basically. Or people, actually, to be fair, will do dumb things. Speaking of which, Mark Van Bommel. Among the many farewells this weekend, Mark Van Bommel, who'd announced his retirement from football, playing his last game for PSV at 20, and he celebrated in classic Van Bommel style. Barry.
Yeah, he got sent off.
Did you see the tackle?
I did. It was his second bookable offence, but it was a red card worthy, just a horrible, nasty challenge, which the kind of challenge which has become his trademark. And it was just thuggish. He's gone, and no big loss, I think.
Mm. He's going to do his coaching badges, excitingly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Philip Cocu taking over. Is he coach or manager of PSV? I'm not sure. But he is another one who's moving from one side of the touchline to the other. Bayern Munich, terrific scenes there at the Allianz Arena as armed with large steins of beer, they ran around throwing beer all over teammates, anybody who was in the vicinity, girls, presenters, everything. It was fantastic. Well worth seeking out on YouTube, that. Ribery lying on the ground, beer being poured all over him. Never seen anything like that either.
It's been a weekend of that kind of stuff, hey?
Hmm?
I said it's been a weekend of that kind of stuff.
It has, hasn't it?
And in at Stoke, Michael Owen's teammates, one or several teammates unknown, celebrated his retirement by egging and flowering his Mercedes.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Well, Owen posted a picture on Twitter, and they absolutely destroyed his car.
Does it wash off?
Yeah, but it's probably... You have to drive to the car wash in a big Merc that's covered in eggs and flour.
Right.
You made a big impression there.
Interesting. Very good. Okay, well, let's just finish off then with the latest on the playoffs. We know one of the finalists for the championship playoff.
Yes, absolutely spectacular scenes at Vicarage Road. And Manuel Almunia, who had a relatively maligned period in English football with his Arsenal days, showing, I think, that it was a fantastic sort of double penalty save, you know, high pressure situation. Basically, Watford were winning 2-1, and Leicester had an opportunity to equalise in stoppage time with a penalty.
A very, 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 very soft penalty.
Yeah, a soft penalty.
And what was the name of the player who went down?
Bugger. I can't Anthony, remember.
But I don't know how you pronounce
it. Knockout.
Knockout, yeah. And it, you know, clearly would have been a knockout blow. But just as sub-editors all over the country were teeing up that headline, he sees it saved not once but twice by Almunia.
Yeah.
And then, sorry, was this better or worse than the Brentford Doncaster finish?
Well, in this great clip that's taken from the Watford supporters' viewpoint, you can actually hear someone say, "Do a Doncaster!" as they're breaking. So it's sort of part of that folklore.
And they do.
And they do, and they broke, and it was a fantastic finish by Troy Deeney, who then ripped off his shirt and ran into the crowd. Jumping around with all the fans, and it was, you know, I know you're not supposed to do with this sort of thing nowadays in football, but it was just beautiful to see that kind of sort of shared emotion, and the place really went completely mad. But the thing I like particularly about Almunia getting a little bit of hero status is that, you know, reflecting back on that time with Arsenal, it was a difficult time for him, and it seems to me that he's a player who's sort of found his right level. And I think what his main problem, he was always a decent goalkeeper, but handling the pressure was a big problem when he was at Arsenal. And it was something that the club didn't really deal with. They sort of left him out there in the spotlight. And I think that there were times when he went to Arsenal and said, you know, I'm not enjoying this. And I think he found it very, very difficult psychologically and didn't perhaps get quite enough support or recognition. They didn't really deal with it. They just let him carry on playing.
It's interesting you say that, because with Chesney this year, for example, the way that he was dropped for mental reasons.
I think it's a slightly different case. I think Chesney, in terms of his personality, is a very confident, cocksure young man. And I don't think that he does take things to heart. Whereas I think Almunia, you know, literally... It would be unfair to say he had a nervous breakdown, but there were points where he looked like it was a real genuine struggle.
Right.
I think it was. So you know, being in that kind of intense spotlight, and it is very different if you're at a top four Champions League caliber of club compared to being in the championship, for example. And I think he's really rediscovered himself at Watford, away from that intensity, and felt relaxed enough to play more to his capabilities. And I think it just shows that sometimes there are certain players that can really thrive in certain environments, and he's found one that suits him.
But didn't Ben Foster make similar comments over the weekend or last week, that he just said he wasn't cut out to be Manchester United goalkeeper, just didn't have the right mental frame of mind to handle the intense pressure involved in such a big job? And I suppose for a goalkeeper, it's probably particularly tough, because there's no hiding place if you're in goals. If you're an outfield player having a tough time mentally, you can hide. You can just fob the work off on other people, but not if you're a keeper.
No.
So on Troy Deeney as well, he actually started the season in jail. In prison for, I think, a fray. And now, you know, he's come back and he's scored 20. That was his 20th goal of the season. And he was also, you know, partly responsible for them not going up automatically, because he got a silly red card against Leeds in the last game of the season, which they needed to win to go up. He got sent off for two bookings, one of which was a foul, one of which was for kicking the ball away, I think when he was possibly through on goal, and did a, you know, Van Persie against Barcelona, and then sent Michael Brown flying, so they didn't have him, and didn't have him for the first leg, which they lost to Leicester. And then he has come back and part of a very good strike force, which got them through yesterday. And there was that brilliant goal by Mate Vidra as well, which is kind of ambassador volley for that first goal.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, very worth checking out.
Did you see Crystal Palace against...
That was great. Yeah, the 0-0.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the second leg of that is this evening.
Yeah,
I can only hope it is slightly better than Friday.
Yeah, I suspect Crystal Palace might have left that behind them at Selhurst Park. I was surprised, actually. I thought Brighton would beat them pretty comfortably, and Palace were the better team for long stretches of that match, but I think they'll lose this evening.
Glenn Murray in doubt?
Is he in doubt or is he just out? I think he's cruciate, is it?
Oh, really?
Yeah, so he's going to be out a long time, which is unfortunate for them. But I foresee a Brighton-Watford final that Brighton will win.
Zola v. Poyet.
Mm.
Wow.
Mm. But I think either team, our R&D Palace, would be a welcome addition to the Premier League.
Yeah. Good. Excellent. That is today's Bumper Football Weekly. Many thanks for joining us back on Thursday with other things. Have a super time in the meantime. Many thanks, Amy, for coming in.
Lovely to be here.
Jacob.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barry Glendenning.
Ta.
And producer Ben. Have a super week. Speak to you soon.